We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What's happening? Welcome back. 404-892-2703. Hold the number. Phone lines are jam-packed. You cannot get through. Before I take any more calls, I have a legend in the studio, a living legend, Bill Lester, member of a small group of African-Americans who have raced professionally in NASCAR. Bill's life has played out in reverse of the traditional rags to race cars story. Racing cars professionally became Bill's second career. His initial profession entailed working for a Hewlett-Packard company after receiving his electrical engineering and computer science degree from UC Berkeley in 1984. As a software development engineer, he wrote diagnostic code for workstation computers and business class server systems. But he quickly ascended to research and development project manager in 1988, and then somehow he started racing cars. Okay. What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm good, Rashad. How you doing, man?
The first question, this is just me listening to me talk about you.
Okay.
What day was it when you were, I don't know, getting paid hundreds of thousands of bucks in a career profession that's going absolutely nowhere? It's going to always be here. It's going to always be in demand.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that's how it played out. Yeah. All of a sudden, I woke up and said, you know what? I want to be a professional race car driver.
How did it happen?
That was not the case. My father took me to a race when I was young. Okay. When I was about 8 years old, just shy of that, in Monterey, California, Laguna Seca Raceway, Northern California is where I grew up, because he knew I had a love of cars and I love speed. I love reading his, you know, car magazines before he almost finished them. And so he said, you know what? Let me just take my son to this race and, you know, see what he thinks about it. Man, I was hooked. That was it, you know. And I was like, well, okay, this is something I want to do. But I didn't know if it was something I could aspire to because I didn't see anybody looking like you and me.
Right.
Nobody.
Especially back then.
Man, I'm telling you, folks were looking at me and my father kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But still, it was more liberal there than had he brought me to probably a NASCAR race at that same age, you know, down in the deep south here.
Right.
I can't imagine what that would have been like.
Right.
So, you know, be that as it may, that set the hook. I said, man, this is cool. I'd love to be a race car driver. But, you know, how do you become a race car driver? Because my parents were not going to buy me a go-kart, which is kind of the platform by which most race car drivers start.
Yeah.
But what my father did expose me to was computers and technology. My father is a world-renowned theoretical chemist, PhD and all.
Wow.
And
all of you guys are just smarties.
I came from pretty good stock.
I
can say that much. But he was not going to give me a race car because that was so far removed from our family dynamic. I mean, you know, hey, son, go out and play, you know, stick and ball sports with your friends and all that kind of stuff. But racing, you know, that's not in our DNA.
Wow.
But it was in my DNA. And so, you know, lo and behold, he exposed me to computers and technology. I was kind of like at the forefront of the technological boom in Silicon Valley. And so, you know, I figured, hey, I could write my ticket if I get this engineering degree, start working for, you know, a renowned company like Hewlett-Packard. And that's what I did. With my first paycheck, essentially, I went out and bought a race car and started racing amateur in Northern California. The first year, I was Northern California Rookie of the Year. Second year, I was Northern California Racing Champion for my class and my division. And I thought immediately I would become professional. I thought that as a result of those accomplishments coming out of nowhere, you know, that corporate America would embrace me and would allow me to become a professional.
Now, because in order for that to happen, you need corporate sponsorship?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Unless you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth. And I was furthest away from that. Now, while I came from a great middle-class background, the difference between racing amateur and racing professional is cubic dollars.
Yeah.
Cubic dollars. And that's one of the things that has been the most frustrating throughout my whole racing career is our lack of access to capital. Most of the people that are making those decisions in corporate America are the color of a sheet of paper. And when it comes to a diversity spin, you know, of maybe five figures, you know, or something like that, okay, that's cool. But when you're talking about major professional racing, you're talking seven, 8-figure spend.
Wow.
And then what happens, you become mainstream marketing budget and, you know, all the decisions that have to go around making that sort of, you know, decision in terms of how a company's going to spend its money. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it just became very, very frustrating. And so I had a 15-year career at Hewlett-Packard, you know, just being miserable because I wasn't racing and doing what I wanted to do, but I felt I was given a passion and a gift to do.
Did you still do the amateur thing or did you stop that?
I did the amateur thing only for a very short time because I just did not want to just continue to run around on a small scale. I wanted to be there racing with the best.
You were good enough. You just did not have access to the corporate sponsors to make it happen.
That's correct. Yes. That is absolutely right. I, you know, had my first professional race, did extremely well in it. Still, that didn't move the needle. You know, folks were saying, man, you know, you got talent, you got all that sort of thing. But now, especially even more so when I was racing, you know, day in and day out, your checkbook as a driver comes first and your helmet comes second.
Okay.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's the politics first, the business second, and then the sport of motorsports.
Okay.
And the politics of it is that you got to be in the room. You got to be there pressing the flesh with the people that can make those 7- and 8-figure decisions. That's the politics. You got to be in the room. You got to be networking and all that kind of stuff that I was doing. Then becomes the business aspect of it, which is that, okay, you finally have attracted the interest of a, you know, CEO, CFO, CMO, whatever the case is for a major corporation. Now you got to go in and justify to them why they're going to spend that money on you. That's the business side. And then third, if you're fortunate enough to get through all those hurdles, you actually get to put a helmet on and do what it is you want to do.
What are some of the corporations that have sponsored you? Because you stopped in 2012.
I did, yeah. And so, you know, my major sponsor when I was racing in NASCAR was Waste Management. Mm-hmm. And they were the ones that allowed me to make my professional debut in the Cup Series in 2006. The Cup Series is the top level. That's racing on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Truck Series on Friday. There's what's called the Xfinity Series on Saturday. But the place where Jeff Gordon, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Tony Stewart, all those guys drove, and now currently, you know, a bunch of the new young guns are driving, that's in the Cup Series. And so it's, you know, Waste Management was the one who took a look at the opportunity to make history. And when I'm talking about making history, I'm talking about in the last 60 years or so of NASCAR, there's only been four guys to race on Sunday on the top level. Wendell Scott in the 60s and early 70s, a guy named Willie T. Ribbs in the 80s. I came through in the mid-2000s. And now, fortunately, after another 10, 12 plus years has gone by, a guy named Darrell Bubba Wallace is on the circuit at the top level.
Wow, who's sponsoring him?
You know what? It's interesting. He's racing for Richard Petty. And they were struggling mightily for sponsorship, even with Richard Petty, the king of NASCAR, or some say the Kang of NASCAR.
Yeah.
He was having trouble getting the sponsorship for his team. And so they were struggling mightily. And so what has happened, which is unique in Bubba's scenario, is that he got a guy by the name of Dave Stewart, who was the founder of a company called Worldwide Technology, to sponsor him. And he said clearly when he did it, I'm not sponsoring Richard Petty. I'm sponsoring Bubba Wallace,
mm-hmm.
something I couldn't get. I mean, I went to the Oprahs and I went to P. Diddy's. I went to, you know, everybody trying to get
some
love.
How much money are we talking?
To race on Sunday at an effective, competitive level, it's about a $20, $22 million proposition a year.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, so you
can't
have to
cash app that to you.
You have to go corporate. It has to be corporate spend.
$22 million a year?
Yeah, exactly. And that's one car. That's, you know, 36 races. And people go, well, how can you spend all that money? But trust me, it can be done.
Let me ask you about the cars I see with multiple sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same scenario? You just have to get to a certain ad buy or spend collecting multiple sponsors?
Well, let me tell you why it's gone to multiple sponsors.
Okay.
With basically the financial fall that our country suffered in like around 2008 with the correction, corporations that were spending money just willy-nilly just said, you know what, we can't do this anymore. You know, we have to look at everything really close. And whereby prior to that time frame, you could get an exclusive sponsor. Like, for example, Jeff Gordon had DuPont as his sponsor
forever. I remember the DuPont car. I remember the Tide car.
There you go.
Yeah.
And nowadays, you are looking at, as you mentioned, cars that have a revolving sponsorship scenario on them.
Yep.
And that is because most companies are not trying to spend that $20 to $22 million. They're trying to spend, you know, maybe $7 or $8 million a year. And that's why they're using multiple sponsorships and rotating them on that car per race. These companies are like, oh, you know what? I don't need a presence and exposure in all 36 races and 36 markets. I need it primarily in 7 or 8 markets. So I'm going to take this sponsorship at about $7 to $8 million. I'm going to let you go and run with this other company so that they can, you know, meet their business objectives, marketing objectives. And then, you know, okay, you still have a spend there to fill out the whole budget. Put another sponsor or two on there, and that's how it gets done. So drivers jump out of their cars now. They look at their car to see what sponsor's on it and go, I want to thank X, Y, and Z, because right. they don't know who is on it.
They have no idea. Yeah, I really think politicians should adopt the same philosophy of NASCAR, where we can see clearly on their suits exactly who sponsored them.
There you go.
Right.
It'd be very clear then, wouldn't it?
Exactly. We got more on the other side. I'm here with Bill Lester, one of the very few members, black members, African-American members, who have raced professionally in NASCAR. We got more. News and Talk 1380 WAOK. What's happening? Welcome back. I'm in the studio with Bill Lester. He is a member of a very small and selective group of African-Americans who have raced professionally in NASCAR. Competed for the Dodge factory team in the NASCAR is Gander Truck.
Yeah, Gander Truck. Gander Outdoor Truck Series.
Yep, in 2002 and 2003. Earned back-to-back pole positions at two different racetracks in 2005. In 2006, became only the third African-American to race in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series in the past 60 years. Competed professionally in the NASCAR-sanctioned Grand Am Series in 2011. And became the first African-American to win a race. Also finished second in championship points that season. You were always a championship driver, and you saw that from the beginning. But as you said before the break, you could not get sponsorship. You are exposing us to a part of the game we didn't know. Okay? Because we assumed that if you're just damn good, you're going to get on that track. That's obviously, exactly right. It's more to that. Unpack that more for us.
Yeah, it's true. You would think just like a stick and ball sport where you've proven your talent.
Yeah.
You're not going to be expected to bring a big checkbook to continue
with you
to climb the ladder to the NBA. But that's exactly what goes on here with professional motorsports, and not just NASCAR. We're talking about professional motorsports
across the board.
Across the board.
This is so weird to me, man.
Open wheel racing, IndyCar, sports car racing, drag racing.
This is
ridiculous.
This is a sport where the championship player literally has to obtain the money in order to play the sport.
Yes.
Is that a fair analysis?
It's you know, a slightly broad generalization, but for the most part, it's accurate. And what I mean by that is there are a handful of professional drivers, like at the NASCAR level, top, you know, level of NASCAR, mm-hmm. that are not responsible necessarily for bringing that checkbook, but they are responsible for helping that team solidify that sponsorship.
Right.
They don't have to write, you know, a check themselves in terms of the sponsor they bring, but they better go on some of those marketing calls with that team to try to get that sponsorship,
right.
Of course. But, you know, it's crazy because the business side of it is just doesn't make any sense from the standpoint of the athlete being the one who is so heavily responsible for making sure that they can compete. And that's exactly what happens.
Amazing.
One of the things I wanted to mention, too, is like at the very top level of professional sports worldwide, it's Formula One. There's a guy named Lewis Hamilton, brother, mm-hmm. out of Britain, who is like four, maybe even five-time world champion. And you don't even hear about him here in the States. This dude is the truth. He is considered to be the best professional race car driver in the world because Formula One is the top level of motorsports worldwide. NASCAR is number one here in the States.
Right.
But this brother's doing big things. But, you know, here, he was put in a go-kart in his single-digit years, and then he was picked up by a factory team at about 10 or 12 to continue his pursuit. And so that's why his family was taken out of that burden. When I
right.
talked about Bubba Wallace, his parents had spent over $1 million out of their own pocket getting him to the point where he was finally at the point to race professionally in NASCAR. So it's crazy how many, you know, African-American families, minority families in general, are going to put their kid in, at the go-kart level, a six-figure sponsorship program so that they can maybe aspire to race as a professional later.
Wow. We got calls. I got Anthony and Marietta. Anthony, good day. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Rashad?
Good. How are you?
Hey, Mr. Lester, you stole my thunder, man. I was calling to ask you about Lewis Hamilton. I'm glad you shed light on it because it's interesting, man. He holds the record right now for being sponsored by a major motorsports team. He was only 10, and that team is McLaren.
Right.
And co-sponsored with Mercedes, who he races for today. And you're right, he is the highest paid motorsport. He's the highest paid race car driver in the world. I think he makes like $52 million a year.
Something like that. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Hold on, brother. Did you say 52 million?
Oh, yeah.
$52 million a year. And see, and that includes sponsors, Rashad. That's straight salary.
That's his money.
That's his money, yeah.
Amazing.
By the time you add sponsors, it's over with. And a lot of people don't realize Formula One race car drivers are the highest paid athletes in the world sometimes. Remember, Michael Schumacher was up in that level. And by the way, they asked Michael Schumacher to leave, who is a German, to leave Mercedes so that Lewis Hamilton can have that seat. And when the news reporters asked him, hey, they say they're going to give you a seat to Lewis Hamilton. Michael Schumacher said, if you can get Lewis Hamilton, you get Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
So the brother is the truth. And it is sad, man, that people in America, you know, young Jeezy, man, I put on for my city. You remember
he
said, call me Jeezy Hamilton, riding down camera. That's who he was talking about.
You know what? Wait a minute, man. I feel so embarrassed right now because I am a trap music connoisseur. And I never knew that that was the reference. Jamie, get on the microphone, sir. This is the moment. Jamie, did you hear what this brother said? I know you're answering calls. Repeated caller, Mr. Anthony and Marietta.
He said, call me Jeezy Hamilton, flying down Camelton.
All right, stop right there. Yeah. Jamie, who is he talking about? Who is Jeezy? Who is Hamilton in Jeezy's reference?
Oh, got him.
Go ahead and tell him, Anthony.
You know, when the song I Put On For My City.
Right.
You know, when he said, call me Jeezy Hamilton, flying down Camelton. He's talking about Lewis Hamilton, Formula One race car driver.
A brother.
A brother, yeah.
A brother.
Back then, Jeezy was up on that, and that's why he was referencing how he's driving. You see how the bar works now? I mean, come on, man.
Right.
Damn, I got to move Jeezy to the top three. T.I. is still number two, though.
these rappers, they be on it,
they
man.
Know.
You know, they go to the races. You see him in Monaco in his star with him.
Right.
You know, man.
Call me Jeezy Hamilton. Put some G's on, man. Jamie, go ahead and put that song on, man.
But I'll tell you, man, just so you know, I mean, I was telling you about the sponsorship level here in the States for NASCAR.
Yeah.
Anthony will tell you the sponsorship requirements for worldwide Formula One racing is about $350 million. For two cars, a two-car team, $350 million for like Ferrari and Mercedes, like what Anthony was talking about, who Lewis drives for. It's crazy money.
Amazing.
One Formula One race car team budget is more than the entire NASCAR teams put together.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's insane, man. It's much because they're in different cities every week.
Brother, I got to tell you, man, you have been enlightening. Thank you for helping me understand that Jesus Hamilton line. Never understood it, just was rolling with it. Thank you, brother.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank you, man.
Good talk to you.
Yeah, we got more on the other side. If you got a question, call us up. I'm here with Bill Lester, News and Talk, 1380 WAOK. What's happening? Welcome back. Bill Lester in the studio, living legend. One of the very few African-Americans to race professionally in NASCAR. In the building, let me ask you about writing a book or something, man.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, you know, I put together a memoir, and its working title is Winning in Reverse.
Winning in Reverse.
It is a motivational memoir, and the reason it's named that way is because, as I kind of explained earlier, I kind of did everything backwards. Guys like Lewis Hamilton, for example, and most of your typical drivers start out very young, karting, work their way up the ladder, and by the time they're in their teens, they're racing. Well, here I am, not having that opportunity to do any karting when I was young, working for corporate America, leaving a successful career by everybody else's definition but my own. I define success as happiness. Am I looking forward to the next day? Am I, you know, excited about it? I was going through the motions. I was hating the typical corporate job, living for the weekends. And so I left at 37 to pursue what my passion was, which was racing. And I did not become professional until I was 40. I broke the mold. That will never happen again.
Wait a minute. I'm going to try it.
Okay. Let me see you jump in a race car now.
Tell you something. I'm 38, man, with a lead foot, brother.
So, yeah, here I am on the scene, coming from Northern California to the Southeast, the Deep South, I got no experience with. My earliest, you know, visions of NASCAR were on ABC's Wide World of Sports when the Southern 500 you know, in Talladega and the Daytona 500 and all these guys running around in a circle, you know, trying to stay off a concrete wall in fourth gear, which I could not understand, you know, because my definition of racing is you upshift, you downshift, you turn right and left. You don't just put it in fourth gear and try to stay off a concrete wall. But I knew I wanted to be in NASCAR when I got to the professional level because that was the big arena. I didn't want to be in a small pond. I wanted to be where the action was and make a name for myself. And so with my wife's blessing and encouragement, strong woman she is, and we're actually celebrating 25 years of marriage today.
Congratulations.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. She said, listen, you know, you're not getting any younger or any easier to live with. Make it happen or say that you tried, you gave it your best, and it wasn't meant for you. Yeah. So we gave ourselves 3 years, and at 40, I became a professional race car driver in NASCAR.
Look at God. Amen to that. In 2003 and 2004, you were featured on the cover of General Mills Honey Nut Cheerios.
Man, how crazy is that?
Let me tell you something, brother. I've been featured on the cover of a lot of magazines. Now, damn it, man. I have never been featured on the cover of a freaking cereal box.
That's fairly unique,
That's
man.
That's a
Quite
whole
an honor.
Different situation.
It is. I mean, I was just blown away when they said we would like you to represent our brand.
Do you know how light-skinned I act if I was asked to be on the cover of a damn cereal box?
Man, I like to say that I was scaring kids on their breakfast table. Because, I mean, it's like, really? They want my picture
that
on the front of General Mills Honey Nut Cheerios?
Did you
and I was proud.
Did you go to a grocery store and see it? And
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I would trip people out, you know. I'd
be walking in the
down,
grocery store?
Absolutely. And I would see this woman, you know, picking up, you know, this Honey Nut Cheerios box and looking at my face and my, you know, truck on it. And I would, like, kind of just, you know, peer around the corner, look at her. And she'd look at me, look at the box. And she'd do a double take.
Yes.
And, yeah. She's like, you're him. I'm like, yeah.
Wow.
So I have a Sharpie with me, and I autograph it for her.
That's too cool, man.
It was too nice, yeah.
Very nice. All right, you got a lot of callers. We have conservative Republican Mitchell Shelby. Mitchell, good day. Welcome.
Hey, Mr. Lester and Rashad. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
What's going on, Mitchell?
Hey, brother, let me tell you what. You're going to be all right. I know the trap music is a little bit much for brothers like you and I.
Oh, man, it's brothers, all good.
You go to Lake Tenetonka and purify yourself when you leave there. You're going to be absolutely fantastic.
Hey, man, listen, I'm all right. You know how I know I'm all right? It's because people ask me, what kind of music do you listen to? And I said, I'm like straight up hip-hop and R&B. It's like, wait a minute, you're not listening to jazz or, you know, something cool or mellow? I'm like, nah, you know, I'm keeping track with my 13 and 16-year-old sons.
Yeah, and let me tell you something, Mitchell. When I was playing at Jeezy, man, bro, he was rocking with it. He was rocking with it for real. Not like you. When I play Jeezy around Mitchell, he starts praying.
Is that right?
He goes into his quiet place.
I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
I really wanted to say something, Rashad. You know, you don't know, like I said, I guess you guys are finding out because we had him on Sucker Free last week.
Yep.
The brother is, like you said, to start how special he is, one of four brothers. But like you said, I think that most people really get it because, like you said, Rashad has a nice car and you drive real fast. But try doing that for a few hours.
That makes it a sport.
Rashad, and I told him I was in one of those little golf carts, those little go-kart things, and after about 15 minutes, man, your body is physically tired. But I really want to say something, too, because the thing that made him so special also in his sport is it's true enough there's racism in the sport. But like he said, you just don't wake up one day at 21 and 22 and all of a sudden you start driving a race car. These kids have been in the sport.
Yeah.
Ever since they were five, and they started out with the push carts. Then you go to go karts. Then you go to go karts that are a little bit faster. Then, you know, it's a law of progression to move, and it's just like the almost like the academic world, Rashad, that you sometimes have to go out and get people to sponsor your research.
Right.
That's the same thing that sometimes that takes place. But you're talking about making some money, like Schumacher. Man, Schumacher, before he passed away, was it? He was worth over $800 million, Rashad, driving a race car.
That is driving insane money, man.
The things we don't know.
Right, right.
And you don't. But, you know, I want him to talk about the – I want Mr. Lester, I'm going to hang up, but I really want you to talk about the reason that the sport is really so popular. It's so much different than baseball, basketball, and football. It's because, like in NASCAR – they let you almost get to the point of being able to go in the pits, touch the drivers. In Formula One, I want to hear him talk about that, how close and how close you can get to the race car drivers, and that's really part of the expectation of being a driver is you really kind of are able to get out there with your fans, touch them, to sign autographs and things of that nature, and how you are, how people can come on the pits and develop a bond and a relationship with their driver. Because Rashad, if you say something about somebody else's driver, that is almost that was a fight word. And I really want to talk about that, sir. Again, it was a pleasure meeting you, and I can't wait to get your memoirs, okay?
I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Mitchell. We will allow you to answer that on the other side of the break.
Sounds good.
All right. 404-892-2703. You're getting real with the realest man on radio, news and talk, 1380 WAOK. What's happening? Welcome back. Still in the studio with Bill Lester, living legend, one of the very few members, very few African Americans who have raced professionally in NASCAR. He has a lot of accolades, including being on the cover of a General Mills Honey Nut Cheerios box. And they didn't put you on like a regular-ass General Mills cereal. They put you on the Honey Nut Cheerios. That's serious stuff, man.
Yeah, absolutely. That was mainstream.
That's mainstream, man.
No, I mean, that was quite an honor, and did a whole lot of things with General Mills to help promote the brand. We went into different communities.
That's
and
awesome.
Talked about the importance, you know, of taking care of yourself, your health, that sort of thing. We had screenings. We did things of that nature, and that was definitely front and center, and, you know, just really encouraging people in the community, come on up, man, get your screening done, whatever the case is. So it was quite tremendous. I enjoyed that time.
I know you left in 2012. You started doing consulting for motorsports, analyst, a broadcast analyst. You did that.
I did that too.
Can you get back in the car if you wanted to? Can you give them a run for their money right now?
You know what? I could. I kept myself in good shape. The thing that would be difficult, though, is the experience. The thing that really separates an amateur driver from a professional driver is, one, a professional is going to have a God-given gift that you can't teach. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never been formally trained as a race car driver. I learned from watching and doing. You know, I just was never sat down in any classroom or put out there on a track really to go through all the steps and the motions that, you know, develop a driver hopefully to become a professional. But the other thing, though, that is key besides the gift is the experience. There are a lot of guys that can go out there and drive fast and crash.
Right.
The professional is the one who can drive 9 or 10 tenths without overstepping the boundary. You know, anybody go out there 180 miles an hour, but then, you know, you're scraping the wall or you're, you know, tearing down the fence and you're bringing back, you know, nothing but the steering wheel. That's not going to give you any kind of career.
You know,
you have to be fast on a consistent, continual basis. You have to know what's going to happen in the race car before it happens. Yeah. You have to be proactive, not reactive. Those things can't be taught.
Let's go to Walter in Atlanta. He has a question. Walter, good day. Welcome. Walter, are you there? Going once, going twice.
Sold.
No, Walter. Ernest. Ernest, good day.
Good day, gentlemen. It's one of my sort of semi-favorite kind of sports of replacing watching the NFL and stuff, since I still ride with Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
I have to applaud the gentleman there that you have guest there for his efforts. I've not followed the stock car, but I have followed Lewis Hamilton for years. And just the fact that he mentions Lewis Hamilton, that is impressive, because I think that for us, we don't get to see many of us at the top in anything that doesn't have a ball. And this arena of sports is something that I'd like to know, how can we get more of us to follow it there. I watched Lewis, like I say, Hamilton for years. He's driven for Petronas, driving those Mercedes-Benz cars and diesel cars and whatnot. Just phenomenal. And the racial component that I believe Mitchell mentioned earlier was something I was going to reference too, is you look at some of the comments by really some of the European drivers when Lewis is competing, and you can see that they are not very appreciative of the fact that he has melanin. But I'd like to know just, you know, how can we get more of our young guys to follow it? Because it's not something that's glorified in our community. And when the races come on, I generally am watching on Sunday, and I find that Lewis is racing, I follow him.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, brother.
So really, I think it comes down to two things. It's exposure and opportunity. You have to be exposed to it at a young age. And fortunately, I was when my dad took me to a race short of 8 years old. And then you have to have the opportunity to compete in it, to perform, see if it's something that you want to do, see if it's something that you have a skill and an aptitude to do. It's a big risk to put a kid behind the wheel of a race car in their single-digit years because you don't know as a family, for example, if the kid's going to want to continue to do it. You know, let's say, like I said before, you're trying to pursue a national go-karting or karting championship, national. That's a six-figure commitment from a family to try to do that because no corporate sponsors are doing that.
Right.
There's no exposure. There's no reason for them to do it. So that is a family spin. How many families do you know of that are going to put $100,000 behind the idea that their kid wants to race when there's no promises or guarantees or even the kid wants to even continue on with the, you know, because they haven't developed a passion or they lost their passion for it? It's very difficult. It's so different from a stick and ball scenario where it doesn't hardly cost anything to play it, to perform in it, you know, a baseball bat or a football or, you know,
it's
a
not
glove,
nearly,
whatever.
It's not nearly as expensive.
Absolutely.
Right.
So it's a lot more accessible and attainable and a lot more kids, you know, have access to the stick and ball stuff as opposed to a car. If you're going to race a kart, you have to go to a track.
Yeah.
You can't run it right up and down the city street, right? So it is a huge financial commitment, logistical commitment. That's why it's so difficult. But that's not to say that there aren't those of us that are trying to do it. It's just that we just haven't been able to get the resources, you know, family dynamic, whatever the case is, to do it. It's just been very difficult.
Did you make good money racing?
Absolutely. It was tremendous money.
Okay, tell us how much.
So, you know, at the height of my career, it was about a little over $500,000 a year.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That was your bring home?
That was my bring home, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a very lucrative sport. If you can get there, but to get there, like I said, a lot of us want to do it, but we're discouraged because we just don't have the wherewithal. We don't have the opportunity to take advantage of the passion that we've developed.
All right, we got other callers. Let's go to Cynthia in Atlanta. Cynthia, good day. Welcome. Oh,
hello.
Yes, hello.
I am thoroughly enjoying this entire conversation.
Thank you.
And two words that Bill Lester, what you mentioned, is so important. Exposure and opportunity, and that's what we, you know, that's what we want to provide to our children when we're able to. And then I just heard you say how much you made. I'm like, ooh, that's more than you were making at Hewlett Packard.
That was way more, but trust me, that was not the motivation for my doing it. I was following
my
dream, that's for sure. But I was good at it, and I was, you know, paid handsomely, so I was
fortunate. Exactly. The other reason for calling you, I think I know your people.
Oh, so
I moved here
that?
From California. You know the Turners? Mel and Connie?
Mel and Connie Turner.
No, you don't know them, though, so it's not the Turner. There is some, I was trying to think of the connection. I remember when a friend said that her daughter's son was doing the race driving.
Cynthia, if you wanted the man's number, all you have to do is just ask for the number offline.
Just give him
a
compliment.
Come on, Cynthia. You come in here with that weak game, Cynthia. If you want, I'm playing with you, sister.
Yeah, no. I appreciate hearing from you, Cynthia. And I mean, I wish I could connect those dots.
No,
and
I'll be able to connect it because I'll be on the phone. I was just
that's what I'm talking about.
Discussion.
That's what I'm talking about. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Cynthia.
I enjoyed it.
Thank you, sister.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm from Sacramento.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we were neighbors.
I appreciate your call. That was interesting. Okay, let's go to Walter. Walter's back. Walter in Atlanta. Walter.
Yes. One question I had was, this racing thing used to be called stock car racing, right?
It is stock car racing. NASCAR is stock car racing. NASCAR stands for the National Association of Stock Car Auto Racing.
Well, since NASCAR is in decline, like attendance-wise, viewership-wise, wouldn't it be cool if they brought back real stock cars? Like, all your cars look alike. There once was a time where the Dodge didn't look like the Ford.
Man, you are opening up a tremendous can of worms. We could talk ad nauseum about why the spectator numbers are on the decline. That is definitely one of the reasons, but there is a myriad of reasons that that's the case, and I don't even think we have enough time for that. But it's sad. It hurts my heart that the sport is on the decline because, I love it so much, and there's so many others that do. But, we can't talk about all the reasons why.
Yeah, but by you guys running the same exact car and the restrictor plates on the cars, so you're running, everybody's running at 199 miles an hour on a super speedway. That's not very entertaining. Not anymore.
All right. Thank you, brother. I appreciate your call. You kind of agree?
It's the drivers that really make the sport. The cars are not the thing. The drivers are the stars. And when most of the drivers have a somewhat vanilla personality, it does not have the excitement that it once had.
That makes sense. Let's go to Julie and Gwinnett. Julie, good day. Welcome.
Hello, Rashad. This is Julie Brown. Nice to talk to you.
Hey,
thanks
Julie.
For taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
My first time calling. You're welcome. And I just want to say, when I was younger, growing up, I lived in Indy, and we used to go for field trips for our school to time trials and stuff. So we got some experience doing that. It'd be nice if they can start doing maybe that in schools again. And also, I used to live near a racetrack in the hood. It was kind of close to the hood. And I just remember every night going to sleep, hearing that sound, hearing that race car sound, putting me to sleep every night. But I'm so proud of this brother, and I appreciate it. And I know now in Indy, a lot of people are going out to the races now, hanging out. So that's a good thing. Maybe it'll increase.
Let's hope
so. And Rashad, we need to talk later about our interview. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, sister. Thank you for your call. Brother, this has been informative and definitely entertaining as well.
Thank you, Rashad. I appreciate being here.
We are looking forward to your memoir.
Absolutely.
How long we got to wait?
That's a great question. I got the literary agent working with the acquisition editors now, and I'm hoping it's sooner rather than later. But, I think there are a lot of things that allowed me to be successful, and I think I can really get people to resonate with some of these things that they can employ that'll help them pursue their goals.
Awesome, man. Are you on Twitter, social media?
Absolutely.
At
@Bill_Lester.
There it
Twitter.
Is. Thank you, brother. Looking forward to having you back.
Thank you, Rashad.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.